The scripture reading today is from Isaiah 40, verses 12 to 31. Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand and marked off the heavens with a span and closed the dust of the earth in a measure and weighed the mountains in scales and the hills in a balance? Who has directed the Spirit of the Lord, or as his counselor has instructed him? Whom did he consult for his enlightenment? And who taught him the path of justice? Who taught him knowledge and showed him the way of understanding? Even the nations are like a drop from a bucket and are accounted as dust on the scales. See, he takes up the isles like fine dust. Lebanon would not provide fuel enough, nor are its animals enough for a burnt offering. All the nations are as nothing before him. They are accounted by him as less than nothing and emptiness. To whom then will you liken God? Or what likeness compare with him? An idol? A workman casts it, and a goldsmith overlays it with gold and casts for it silver chains. As a gift, one chooses mulberry wood, wood that will not rot, then seeks out a skilled artisan to set up an image that will not topple. Have you not known? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is he who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers, who stretches out the heavens like a curtain and spreads them like a tent to live in, who brings princes to naught and makes the rulers of the earth as nothing. Scarcely are they planted, scarcely sown. Scarcely has their stem taken root in the earth. When he blows upon them and they wither, and the tempest carries them off like stubble. To whom then will you compare me, or who is my equal? Says the Holy One. Lift up your eyes on high and see who created these. He who brings out their host and numbers them, calling them all by name. Because he is great in strength, mighty in power, not one is missing. Why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel? My way is hidden from the Lord, and my right is disregarded by my God. Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the faint and strengthens the powerless. Even youths will faint and be weary, and the young will fall exhausted. But those who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint.
So I thought for Mother's Day, it would be good to take a little break from the seven churches of Revelation, as the next one that we would have been looking at is a little heavy. I thought perhaps we'll wait. We'll do it in a few weeks from now. Not really the most fitting for this day. And so instead, I've chosen this text from Isaiah 40, and Isaiah 40, verses 1 through 11, is the beginning of the second half of the book. And if you remember the book of Isaiah, it falls into a statement of judgment. It's quite a challenge to the nation of Israel. But the second half, beginning with verse 1 of chapter 40, is a word of comfort and a word that, in spite of it all, I am with you and I want you to know that I am there, God is saying. So, with famous verses, comfort, O comfort my people, says your God, verse 1. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and cry to her that she has served her term, that her penalty is paid, that she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins. And then it builds up and it ends more or less with verse 9, which says, "Get up to a high mountain, O Zion, herald of good tidings. Lift up your voice with strength, O Jerusalem, herald of good tidings. Lift it up. Do not fear. Say to the cities of Judah, here is your God." So that's the peak in that first unit. Here is your God. You have been away. The second half of the book, Israel is in Babylon. They are in exile. They're feeling that God is not there. Here is your God. So it's meant to be a word of encouragement. The challenge they have is that the people, when they hear that, they still have their own doubts. And they hear the prophet's message of comfort, comfort, my people, and here is your God, and they are probably excited about that. But in their own situation, their own circumstances, they are in exile, and they are wondering, okay, how does that resonate with me, and what does that mean for me? And so this bit that we're going to look at is a unit that is speaking to encourage those in their doubts, to encourage people who are in challenging circumstances, not really knowing what will happen next. How are you there for me, God? That's essentially the big question that's hanging over the unit that we're going to look at. And I would say probably in our own lives there are elements of that. We wonder what's coming next. We wonder where is God going. We may wonder where you are. Where are you, God, in the midst of all this stuff? So you and your circumstances, and I know lots of us are facing challenges. How are you there for me in the midst of that statement, here is your God? So that's where verses 12 and on that Lenore just read, that's what it's speaking to. So we, here is your God, and I'm suggesting that it's our Father, Mother God, who is the one who is speaking to that, because later we have the image of a mother eagle flying, other images like that where God is taking care of us like a mother eagle. So here we have the doubts. So our incomparable God, God is a great God. Here is the answer that Isaiah speaks, and that this is word from the Lord, that he is there for us. And he poses it simply through four rhetorical questions. And the first three we can look at fairly quickly. Who has measured the waters? Verse 12. And it's a wonderful image here that God is holding all the waters of the world. Imagine all the oceans of the world in the palm of his hand. That's a pretty incredible image. I was up in Tobermory yesterday, and I read a little bit of information that I hadn't known before. Just Lake Huron, all the waters of Lake Huron would give everybody on the planet not only one cup, a full cup of water, but would give everybody four cups of water. 7 billion people, four cups of water, one lake. So I'm not sure who figured all that out, but that's some scientist spent months working on that, and that's his final piece. Probably got a big paper out of that. All right. Four cups of water for everybody. But that's a lot of water, but that's only one lake. Imagine all the oceans, God holding it in the palm of his hand. That's a stunning image. And then the second one, who weighs all the mountains like a chemist would weigh some dust in a lab? We have a team going to Bolivia in August, and they're going to spend a lot of time in the Andes Mountains. And the Andes can be the high-soaring mountains like the Rockies, or they can be these rounded-type plateaus that are sitting up there around 20,000 feet. It can be either way. But God holds all of that, and he just weighs it. That's the first response of Isaiah speaking the words of God. You and I have our challenges. Who has measured the waters? Number one, that's a rhetorical question. Secondly, who has directed the Spirit of the Lord? Meaning, who has been his counselor? Has anybody been his counselor? The kings in the days of Isaiah were completely totalitarian in power, had it all, but they had counselors, and they would hear their counselors. And Yahweh is saying here, who has been my counselor? The answer is, no one has been my counselor. Whom did he consult? Who taught him knowledge? God is above it all. Those are the questions and that Isaiah is speaking. So it depicts God as a God with great capacity all over the world. He is sovereign. We've sung of that. He is in charge. And not only the individuals, but even the nations are like nothing. So we wonder, you know, we wonder about the USA today. We wonder about Russia. We wonder about China. We wonder about North Korea, all these powers. But Isaiah is saying, and God is saying through him, these powers are as nothing. Just as a nation is fragile, I mean, an individual is fragile, verse 6 in the first unit, so nations are like that. Nations come and go. Governments come and go. And God is saying, just trust me in the midst of all of the ups and downs that we see on planet Earth. Who does he consult? And so Isaiah is going after that. Why? Because they are in Babylon, the nation, and Babylon is the world power at the time. And so he's speaking to that immediate context. So God is incomparable, number one. And God is greater. And the whole unit is building, and it's the third unit that really is where we want to sit when we get to that. Thirdly, verses 18 to 26, our God is greater, and greater particularly than the idols. So here's the fourth question. To whom will you liken me? The idols, verses 18 and 19. Babylon had amazing idols. Assyria before that had amazing idols. You can go to the British Museum in London and see the lions, the big, powerful lions that stood at the opening gate going into the Assyrian Empire. They're there. They're massive. They would fill out this whole room. That's what stood in front of the gate. And it depicted the powers. And for many of the nations, the powers were the stars. In our own western side of the world, the Incas looked to the sun as a god. And Isaiah is speaking to that. These idols, the prophet says, are as nothing. They are made by artisans. They're stone. They're wood. They may look impressive, but there's nothing behind them. God is greater than the idols. So for you and for me, that may not seem too much because we don't have idols probably in the corners of our houses. But you know we do have idols. And we can see some on the screen. In our day and age, money is a great idol. Money is what people look to. And of course, we need some money for sure. But we're not to make it into an idol. Nor power can be an idol. Security can be an idol. Affection can be an idol. Fame can be an idol. And the reality is we all struggle with something. And you know what? It goes all the way back to when we were kids. It goes back to the ages between 4 and 8. That young. We saw Kofi and his family and Sarah with little ones up here. Even when we are little, things are getting established in our heads. And we look for security. We look for a little bit of power. We look certainly for affection. And it starts, and where we don't seem to get what we need, that stays with us even as we grow old. And as we get and become adults, those very things that stayed with us from kids are still with us. And so somebody can be looking for affection, and it's because they were looking for affection when they were 6 years old, and it's still staying with them. Or it can be a power issue. Thomas Keating talks about these five elements that we hang on to, and they stay with us through life unless we are able to work them through. And for the reality is, for most of us, we haven't worked them through. And then these become potentially idols. And so for each of us, we need to hear the text. We need to hear what is it saying to us. God is greater than our idols. But we need to look to God and stop looking towards our idols, whatever they might be. So I think it's a word that we need to be mindful, even though it's coming from 600 years before Christ. Power, money, fame, security, they won't last, Isaiah is saying. God is greater than the idols. God is greater than the powers. It moves into this proclamation or doxology that God is greater than all of that. Still building. Verse 21, have you not known? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundation of the earth? He looks at the inhabitants. He looks at the nations. Verse 23, he looks at the princes. They are as nothing. Look at verse 24. Scarcely are they planted. He's talking about kings, governments here. Scarcely are they planted, scarcely sown, scarcely has their stem taken root in the earth when he blows upon them and they wither and the tempest carries them off like stubble. They are nothing, just like our own lives come and go. God is greater than it all. So to whom will you compare me? And then specifically, he looks at the stars, verses 25 and 26, because the nations look to the stars in their day. Just as some do today. In Bolivia, the religion of Bolivia formally is the indigenous Mother Earth religion. That is the formality of their world since Evo Morales has taken power. And every spring they have a ceremony, the entire nation, and they go up on the El Alto and they wait for the sun to rise through an ancient gate that they have, and that is the sun speaking to the nation. And Evo was there and all of his advisors. It's like this stuff has gone away. It is there. But know what God says in terms of these created objects. Lift up your eyes on high, verse 26, and see who created these. He who brings out their host and numbers them, calling them all by name, because he is great in strength, mighty in power, not one is missing. All these stars, all these galaxies, billions and billions and billions of them. That many, really. And stars, innumerable. And planets, forget it. We don't even start counting those. It just goes and goes and goes. What are they for? From the words of the prophets, they are there simply as witnesses to God's greatness and his power. That's it. That's all they are from the biblical position. They are witnesses to the majesty of God. And as science shows us more and more and more of what the universe is like, it just shows more and more the grandeur of God. He names them all. Kofi and Sarah named their kids particular names and verses. And God has done that with all the stars. We are more important than the stars. You know that, eh? We think of a star, a sun. Wow, that's impressive. That is so much. Forget it. It's a created object. You are a conscious being. You are able to reflect. You are able to think about the universe and your role in it. In terms of God's eyes, you transcend any of the stars, any of the suns. It doesn't matter. They're not thinking about, how am I doing today? How are my rings doing? I'm Saturn. I'm not looking good in my rings today. They're not shining nice. Forget it. They are. You and I are actually thinking about our place. We are the consciousness of the planet, if you like. It's up to you and I to reflect and take care of God's world. We can't expect any of the other creatures to do it. It's our job. It's an important role. So God is this great one. See, the text is building and building, praising God for who he is. Where are you there for me? God is saying, I am there for you. This is who I am. A reminder, a doxology, which gives glory to God. That's who you are. So God, Isaiah has been building his point. God is incomparable and God is great. That's what Isaiah is saying. So here's where it hits home. The people hear all of that, and their response is still verse 27. Why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and my right is disregarded by my God? I hear all that, they say, but where are you for me? Right now, here and now, in Babylon, because my way seems hidden from God. And I think that's exactly where we are many times. God is this great God. But in terms of my own life, I'm saying, God, where are you in my life? Where are you showing up for me right now? And so the people are asking that. Isaiah recognizes that. And that can be your response and my response right now. Yeah, 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 I hear it. You are greater than the entire galaxy, universe of galaxies. I hear that. But where are you for me? It's a pretty self-centered view, but that is where we are. A self-referential world. That's how we live here in the West. It all revolves around me or you. But nevertheless, that's our response. So God's response to this question, we might say complaint, is that, hey, I am active for you, but you don't see it. I am active, but my ways are fully unsearchable. You can't tap. If I hold all the oceans of the world in one palm, there are going to be things that you don't get about me. But he's saying, I am active for you. That's what verse 28 is saying. I am active. I am working. I'm here in the now. The Lord is the everlasting God. That's why we sang that song. The creator of the ends of the earth. Note, he does not grow faint or weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He does not faint. He does not grow weary. He doesn't stop working. If God stopped working right now, our planet would just go into complete chaos. The stars would start spinning out of control. The planets would not be in orbit. Everything would just end. God is the one who holds it all together. Amazing. Amazing that the scientists can know that if we go all the way to Pluto, the law of physics will work just the same on the planet Pluto as they do here on Earth. We know that. Or we can go to another galaxy. Physics is physics. And God has created it that way. He is one who is sustaining us. He is active. Here's the key verse. And he will sustain us as long as we look to him and wait upon him. So verse 29 is the key verse. This is the key slide of the whole bit. He gives power to the faint and strengthens the powerless. You may wonder, where am I? What's going on? And God is saying, I am active. I am active. But note, even youths will faint and be weary. Young will fall exalted. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. Verse 31. He gives power. He will help you in your situation. But you and I have to wait. Meaning we have to look to him instead of looking at our idols. We need to look to him, wait upon him. And the promise is there, he will be there for us. He will be there for Israel and Babylon, and he will be there for you and me in our situations. Whatever health concerns you have, whatever tests are going to come up, he is there for you. He will sustain you and strengthen you. Whatever money issues, he will strengthen us. That's what he is saying. It doesn't mean that it'll all resolve the way you want it to resolve. It doesn't mean that you can spell out, okay, A, B, C, D, E, this is the way it's going to go. He's not saying any of that. He is saying he will strengthen you as you wait. And so if you and I wait, he will enable us to work through whatever that situation. He will give us the strength to do it. May not be resolved the way you want it to be. Why? Because his ways are unsearchable. We might figure out, man, if God would only do that, it would all clear up. Oh, man, God, just do that for me, and it'll all work out. From our perspective, we might think that. But we don't see the steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 that end. If that would happen, it could blow you right out of the waters. You don't know. I don't know. God knows. And of course, that's as easy and as hard as it gets. That's a challenge to wait. And so, three final points of application. So, he's built to that, right? Our God is incomparable. Our God is greater than the nations, the idols, or whatever. Now here's the invitation. Wait. So number one application, God is our true source. He is our fountain. He is the one we have to go back and look to. He is the one. You want the answer to the question. I get that. But the answer, ultimately, God will give you the strength to get through. Because you don't know how that'll all spin out. You don't know how that'll work. If you're thinking about your kids, what'll happen 10 years down the road? You don't know. God knows. So we have to keep looking. You say, well, that's too hard, man. I don't want to wait for 10 years. He says, what does he say? I could say, suck it up. I could say, that's just too bad. But God is the one who knows. So you frame it whatever way you want, but you and I have to wait and draw strength. Drink from that well. He will get us through. You and I are not the first ones who've had problems on planet Earth. We just look to Him. He does say, though, that He will give us strength as we wait upon the Lord. It's a beautiful word. Wait. Wait. I got a little bird's nest out beside our house. And it's interesting, this robin comes to the nest. I can see it from our bathroom window. So he doesn't know I'm looking. And the lights are on at night. You know what he does? He normally looks this way into the light, that way. When the bathroom light's on, he turns around and looks that way. He's figured it out. I don't want that light shining in my eyes. I'm looking down here. This is at night, right? From 6, 7, 8 o'clock on, he looks that way. He's figured it out. And he takes care of, or she, it's a she, sorry, she takes care of the eggs, and they grow. And God is there. We need to wait, just like those little chicks have to wait on mom to come back. There was a good comic in the New Yorker, and the bird's nest, the chicks are waiting, and mom obviously is busy. And so the dad robin comes back. And he's holding a whole worm. And the little ones say, Mom usually chews it up for us. He's holding the whole worm. Frustrated. Mom usually chews it for us, Dad. We need to wait, right? And God is there. So our true source is God. Secondly, he's there like the mother eager. Secondly, we have this issue, then what is our Babylon? What is the source for our doubt? What is the source that nags us in life? Where are you, God? And you know what? I think it comes back. It comes back to some of these issues we dealt with of kids. And something there is what the devil goes after in your life, and it goes back all the way to this thing that's been unresolved. And that's your Babylon, or that's my Babylon. And I need to give that to God, and I need to wait. But instead, we hold on to that. Often, we keep trying to sort it out ourselves. And the answer is to wait on God. We need to wait on Him. And thirdly, and Brueggemann suggests this, which I like, he says, can we reimagine our lives with God? Can I reimagine my life where it should be, where God is the one who is leading and directing? And now I see it all from, if you like, His perspective. I'm just trusting. I'm just waiting. He is there for me, and I wait. And I wait upon Him. Think about my own mom. You know, my mom, when she was younger, she was a fiery, she always was, but I mean, she was a fiery Irish little woman who knew how to kick butt. She had two sons, and we were way bigger than her. She's like 4'11". We're bigger than 6 feet. And she, man, just ruled the roost in our home. That was it. And, you know, when she had a temper, she'd be, you know, she could fly off the handle. I have lots of stories there, but I won't go there. And then later in life, I used to say to her, Mom, you are such a saint. I see you as a saint. She says, Son, I wasn't always like this, let me tell you. I wasn't always like a saint. So she wouldn't even accept that, but she recognized how she changed over years, giving ourselves to God. And that's our job, is to give ourselves to Him and start living more and more and more that God is indeed my father, my mother, who will take care of me but I invited to wait. And so you and I need to try to figure out, what does that mean, to wait? It could mean prayer, for sure. It means sitting in silence. It means it's waiting, but looking to Him. You have to figure out what that is in your life. The psalmists often say that, wait, wait, wait for me. And so it certainly means not running around and trying to control everything in ourselves, but waiting and trusting and depending and leaning. And you know, that really is the secret. That's where we've got to go. We've got to understand what God says when He says wait, and then trust. Little children are so beautiful because they actually trust. They trust that you're going to be there when you say that, right? They trust. It's wonderful. And we are invited to trust like that to God, who is like this mother eagle who will take care of us. And so it's an encouragement. But that little voice is still going to say in our hearts, where are you, God? Where are you for me right now? That stays with us. God says to us, wait, wait. Lift up your eyes, wait, wait. It will be okay. It will work out. All shall be well, Julie of Norwich said. All shall be well. We wait. And so I wish I could give you 4 steps. We love 4 steps or 3 steps, all right? Do this, this, and this, and you'll have it all figured out. I wish I could do that. But it doesn't tell us that. It just says wait. And now you've got to figure that out. But the issue that you're dealing with, the answer is wait. Wait on God. I don't know what that means for you, but you need to wait. And you need to give it the time for the answer to finally be resolved. But your job is to sit there and to wait, just like my job is. I've got to wait. And God will come. He'll be like the mom and robin. The robin comes back, takes care of the little ones. We may say, I would like it chewed up. God says, okay, but here I am. I'm still here for you. Doesn't always work out the way we want it, but He's there. I don't know. Can we trust that? Can we say yes to that? Yes. In any level? I don't know. Yes. I hope so, because that's what the word is to Isaiah here. And you know what? 70 years later, the nation comes out of Babylon. It took 70 long years. Their job was to wait. And then they finally came out. God led them out. He will do that in our lives, in your life, in my life. May we depend on Him and trust in Him. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen.